Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Victory Monday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. Joining me are two wonderful, beautiful human beings, the one and only Andrew Mertzig. You can find him at Andrew Mertzig on Blue Sky, and of course, Perry Goldstein at Perry underscore Goldstein over on Blue Sky as well as Twitter. Friends, it is a seamless, no doubt about it, Packers victory. It was in the Packers' hands all the way along. We never had to sweat for a moment. What more could you possibly want? We'll get into all of that in just a moment. How are you guys doing?
You're clearly being sarcastic for anybody listening who can't see Andy's face.
Yes, very much. Andrew, how are you doing, first of all?
I'm doing well. I almost rescinded my acceptance to be on this show. If the outcome had been different, I can't handle any more of those shows. So happy that it's a win, and we'll get into sort of the mixed feelings outside of that.
Perry, how are you doing?
Oh, you know. I had a great weekend. It was topped off with a Packers win. Just took some emotional roller coaster to get there.
I'm happy that the Packers Godzilla sweatshirt is 1-0 now, so I didn't have to burn it and never wear it for a Packers game again. So that would have been depressing. But yes, I'm happy to hear both of you are doing well. Of course, Andrew is filling in today. I appreciate you a ton, Andrew. Thank you so much for doing that. Grant is in the middle of moving and doing a bunch of life stuff. He's being an adult. It's so stupid. But Andrew, you're always the best for filling in. So thank you so much for that. Packers win this game 27-23. It was ugly. It was bowling shoe ugly. It's not what I think any of us wanted this game to be. It followed the Cardinals scouting report to a T. They're in every single game up until the very end. And then they kind of choke it away at the end. I didn't think Arizona choked this one away. I thought Green Bay kind of stole it away at the end. We'll talk about Matt LaFleur's decision to go for it on fourth down, which I thought was a major game-altering moment in this one. But Perry, I'll start with you. You seem a little bit maybe more frustrated about this one overall. What do you need to get off your chest? I'll give you the floor.
Okay, where do I start? I think... Maybe I need to adjust my expectations of who the Packers are. Maybe I need to like readjust what like regular season games look like. But I just feel like the Packers consistently sort of play down to their opponent a little bit. They're by far and away a much better football team than the Cardinals, especially with Jacoby Brissett at backup. And I just expected them to be a little bit more dominant than they were. It's not to say that I don't appreciate like the ability, you know, we'll get into it, I'm sure. I certainly appreciate the ability to get a little bit of a come from behind win. And the fourth quarter was certainly something to be proud of. But I'm not proud that they sleptwalk through the whole first half and put themselves in that position. I'm not proud that they are this defense, which sometimes looks incredible and then sometimes gives up a third and 23. There's like a level of inconsistency that they still need to work through, that like I think when they play better teams is going to result in losses versus wins. So it was just a hard watch for that reason, because every time I felt like they got in favorable positions, they got themselves out of those favorable positions. And I mean, kudos, I think Jacoby Brissett played a very, very good game given what he had in front of him. Certainly better than I was expecting, but like in no world should this defense have been giving up that level of like yardage to him. So I'm sure in time and in rewatch, I might feel differently. I might not, but this team has like all the pieces. They just are like really still not putting it together for four complete quarters.
Andrew?
Yeah, I think what Perry said about the inconsistencies on both sides of the ball are something that I would echo. I try to be careful about this because years ago, I just decided, like, I'm not going to be upset when the Packers win anymore. Like, you won the game. It's incredibly difficult to do that in the NFL. You look around the league, like, do we know a team that's really good? Is it the Colts, right? Like, who saw that coming? Is it the Buccaneers?
The Colts, who had basically the same exact game against the Cardinals where it came down to the end. But yes, go on.
Perfect. And so, you know, you think the three most talented teams in the league coming in are the Bills, the Ravens, and the Eagles, and they've all struggled in their own ways. Obviously, the Ravens more than everybody else. But things happen, and I think you don't need to apologize for winning a game. However, I said this. I was a guest on a show that you might not be familiar with, Pax What She Said, last week. You should check it out if you aren't already.
Hate that show.
Yeah. So, like, what I told Maggie was I would love to start seeing this team correcting some of the problems that they have. And I think the frustrating thing is it doesn't seem like they're correcting the problems they have, or they're creating new problems and fixing some of the old ones. So, yeah, I mean, it's easy to be frustrated with this. At the end of the day, they escape. They get that tick in the win column. They can move on. But, yeah, I think this team needs to start seeing marked improvement week over week before we can start taking them seriously as a contender in the NFC.
I would love to give my thoughts. This just came through as we're recording this, and I think this is a better way of putting it. This is the Ryan Wood is the start of this. It said Xavier McKinney is getting tired of the Packers sweating out close victories. He thinks they are capable of more, and he made that clear in his locker room after, quote, "We for damn sure can't do this against good teams because it's not going to work." And then said, quote, "It shouldn't even come down to the fourth quarter. I think we have a better team, and I don't think we played really up to our standard as much. We'll get back to the film room and find ways to be better, but we for damn sure can't do this against good teams because it's not going to work. I think the guys know that. Yeah, we're not happy, or we're happy about the win, but we've got to be a lot better." I don't think any of us need to say anything more than that, right? That's from the leader, one of the leaders of the team, the leader of the defense, in Xavier McKinney. And I think that perfectly encapsulates it. And I talked about this a little bit on my live post-game show. And Perry, you mentioned it briefly as well. I think there are going to be times where everything just is not going your way and you still have to find a way to overcome it and win at the end. And I think that's a really positive takeaway from this game. And I don't think that that should be overlooked at all. I did think it was a correct and ballsy decision for Matt to call the timeout and say, screw it, we're going for this. We're going for it on fourth, put the ball in Jordan's hands and let him go and get that, and then finish it off with the touchdown. And then of course have the defense finish it off at the end. I thought there were some really good things to take away from just that mentality of whatever's happened has happened. We're still going to go out and find a way to win this game. Awesome. That's good. That's wonderful. I think X puts it perfectly. I think also the reason why this feels a little bit different to me this week than maybe even it did last week against the Bengals, where maybe again, 9-point victory, never really. And I think that's number one, is it never really felt in doubt. The Bengals never had the ball in the second half with an opportunity to win the game. This one felt quite a bit different in that regard. But also in the first five games of the season, I have a little bit more ability to say, hey, yeah, some of this stuff doesn't look great right now, but it's early in the season. It's not a trend yet. Maybe there's some patterns, but it's not a trend yet. And I'm willing to let a couple of those things go to see if there can be some improvement and see if that stuff gets turned around. And this week, I felt like it was almost the opposite. And now where we're seeing more trends where some of the pass defense stuff is becoming almost more concerning. You're seeing guys run wide open. Trey McBride, public enemy number one in this game, the number one guy, let's not let this guy beat us, is beating you wide open right before halftime for touchdowns and then later in the game on a crossing route as well. Some of the stuff offensively where it just feels like the team doesn't quite have a personality of who exactly they want to be, a mentality of who they want to be, an identity of who they want to be on offense. And it felt like there were moments in this game where it just couldn't feel like they could get in any rhythm whatsoever. The offensive line still has those flaws in those moments. Felt to me that there were more patterns in this one and trends in this one than patterns. And it felt a little bit different. And especially when Arizona was the one that was mostly in control of this game, and then Green Bay kind of took it away at the end.
Yeah. I hope Xavier doesn't have any friends in Arizona, because that's a little bit more brutally honest than we're used to from NFL players, just outright calling the Cardinals a bad team. But I am so frustrated with what is going on defense, because to me, no NFL defenses can take away everything, even the really, really great ones. And it seems to me that Hafley is not picking what he wants to take away. And they're allowing too much stuff. So they're saying, okay, well, we're really solid against the run. That's great. Well, I mean, Bam Knight had a pretty solid game, but like overall, pretty solid against the run. But what are they taking away in the passing game? It seems that the middle of the field is open. It seems that in the perimeter, their corners are going to panic if you throw it deep. It seems that the underneath stuff is often open.
Wide open.
So like, what are we taking away? And if you're going to pay Micah Parsons and Rashawn Gary the kind of money that you're paying them, if you also have to blitz on top of that to get pressure, then like, what's the identity of your defense?
Yeah, you're screwed if you do that, because they can't even, they have a hard time covering when they have full capacity back there. Yeah. Yeah. I think this game, we have known going into the season that the cornerback room was the weakness. We've seen it throughout the season thus far. And to your point, Andrew, it's like, well, how is Hafley mitigating that weakness? Because right now it feels like every team is finding a way to exploit them. And you can be great on against the run. You can be great in pressure. But again, if you're giving up third downs through the air, like all of that is a moot point. So I'd like to see him course correct a little bit. I'm not expecting the players to all of a sudden start playing like they're all pros, but maybe putting them in better positions. Nixon is having a very nice season for sure. My question at the end of this game was like, why is Carrington Valentine not playing on the boundary? That's like one of my biggest questions at the moment. I just don't understand. I think the Nate Hobbs experiment for me is at its point, at its peak. But for the overarching comment, like I think there's enough talent on that side of the ball, and we've seen them play at an elite level, where I don't know why we're allowing every team to exploit their biggest weakness still.
I want to go back to, we'll talk about Nate Hobbs for sure. And we maybe even can transition into that, but, I want to go back to something that Andrew said too. I understand and fully get Jeff Hafley's explanation, and kind of as Andrew was defining it there too, of like, hey, you're going to allow something, right? Like you can't stop everything. And I even appreciated the definition of like, we're going to stop the run. We're not going to allow explosive plays. There's going to be some underneath stuff that's open, but we don't think you can consistently go down the field with that underneath stuff. Okay. I'm willing to concede that. Like I can understand the philosophy and I appreciate it. You can't allow explosives then. And today we saw explosives as a major deal in this game. Zay Jones goes for 43 on a third and long. Marvin Harrison goes for a 35 yarder. Trey McBride is standing wide ass open down the field for a touchdown. Those are the things that absolutely cannot happen then. If your DNA of your defense is going to be, we're going to allow some short stuff, but no deep, no running game. The running game still, I thought overall they had 28 carries for 94 yards. They're averaging 3.4 yards per carry. They had a long of 11, and that was by the quarterback. Their long run by a running back was 9 yards by Bam Knight. Like that, I feel like the run defense still overall gets a mostly passing grade for me in this one. And again, if you're going to allow some of the underneath stuff, so be it. You can't allow the explosives, and the explosives were a big deal in this game.
Yeah, and to your point, like if your identity is going to be pass rush, then I feel like you probably want to stop the underneath stuff and take your chances on the deep things, right? Like that's a smaller percentage of a throw. You have more opportunities to take the ball away down the field. If you know that Jacoby Brissett is not going to be able to hold the ball for longer than 3 seconds, which the pass rush continued to show that when he had to throw the ball, he wasn't going to be successful, then you have to take away the quick stuff. And you can't let Trey McBride run 4-yard curls and then like little crossing patterns and continue to just beat you on second and third and long over and over and over. Like let your pass rush have a chance. And if you have to take the poison of getting beat once in a while, okay. But then at least like you've taken away something and you force them to make great throws.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Let's just talk Nate Hobbs right away. Then we'll get into some positives from this game as well. Let's talk Nate Hobbs. if they would have gotten to a point in that final drive where we know Nate Hobbs was involved in that 21 yard or 20 yard completion, whatever it was on that final drive, I'll need to watch that one a little bit closer to say if that was his fault or if maybe a safety was supposed to come down, or I didn't get a great look at what coverage they were in that exact situation. So that's one I'll be watching on tape this week for sure. But had he given up anything, you know, more on that drive after he told you all game that he wasn't up for this game, like he wasn't performing great and was consistently giving up completions? I just don't understand when Carrington Valentine exists. And I get some of the tackling stuff with Carrington can be a little bit frustrating. They're in all pass situation. Like, you want your best cover guys on the field, and Carrington Valentine is a good cover guy on the outside. And when you've got a player that's not playing well or up to his standard, it's okay. I promise you it's okay to say, we're going to go with Carrington on this drive. And even if you want to play Nate inside, if you don't, then take him off the field and make him earn his way back on in future weeks or whatever you need to do. But I don't love this sort of like undaunted loyalty that, like, no matter what, even if a player is really struggling, it's just, he's still going to get a free pass into that next drive. It's okay sometimes to sit down a player and say, hey, you're not having a good game, and you're going to need to play better than that if you want to get back out there. And I thought Nate Hobbs reached a point in this game when you have a player like Carrington that is as capable as he is to say, we're going to go with Carrington, especially in obvious passing downs. They didn't. I'm glad it didn't cost them, but I was very worried in that final drive that it could have and maybe would have.
That's how I felt too. That's exactly how I felt. I and again, it's, I'm not sitting here saying like, oh my God, why is Jeff Hafley not playing this like Pro Bowl level corner? Why is Carrington Valentine on the bench? Like, we understand that both of these guys come with give and take. I don't want to call it pro and con, but like a give and a take, right? One is going to, you know, in that situation, I felt like what Carrington brings is giving like what they needed.
Yep.
Right. Which was like someone who was going to play a little bit more aggressive towards the ball, much higher likelihood of getting some kind of pass breakup, or at least just like playing hard against their receivers, like not playing off. And I don't know. Hobbs was just not having it tonight. Hafley could course correct, and we'll see what happens against the Steelers. But it was just not. It was not. I mean, it was sleepy. It was just a sleepy day for him. And we saw it, like you said, Andy, from some of the bigger explosive plays.
We'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now, you and I get to make decisions every single day, but on Prize Picks, being right on those decisions can get you paid. Don't miss any of the excitement this season on Prize Picks, where it's good to be right. Time to start getting ready for week 8. It's the big one. Aaron Rodgers faces Green Bay on Sunday Night Football. This one's going to be epic, and I'm already all in on Jordan Love in this game with a huge performance. Elsewhere in week 8, I'm going to go with big games for Patrick Mahomes, Baker Mayfield, and if he plays, Lamar Jackson as well. Here's the best part. Prize Picks is the only app that offers stacks, meaning you can pick the same player up to 3 times in the same lineup. Want to pick more on Lamar Jackson passing yards, rushing yards, and touchdowns? Now you can pick all of them in the same lineup, only on Prize Picks. So what are you waiting for? Download the Prize Picks app today using code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. And don't forget that code PACKADAY. Prize Picks. It's good to be right. Guys, it's 2025. The days of going to the doctor for emergencies are over. No more waiting until walking it off for 6 months doesn't work, or your fingers are numb from texting, I'm fine. It's time to take our health more seriously and get things checked out when we need to. That's where ZocDoc comes in. ZocDoc makes it easier than ever by helping to find the right doctor quickly and easily. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare high-quality, in-network doctors and click to instantly book an appointment. You can filter for doctors who take your insurance, are located nearby, and are highly rated by verified patients. Appointments made through ZocDoc happen fast, typically within just 24 to 72 hours of booking, and more often than not, you can even get same-day appointments. I've already had family members who have used ZocDoc and loved it, and I'll absolutely be utilizing it on all my appointments from here on out. So stop putting off those doctor's appointments and go to ZocDoc.com/packaday to find and instantly book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/packaday. Again, ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/packaday.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll ever know what the justification is. Like, to me, it reads from the outside as Nate Hobbs is the guy we paid all this money to. He's the guy we identified as the solution. We're going to stick with him. And there's not necessarily anything wrong with that from a long-term standpoint. But from the short term, I think you're exactly right, Andy. Like, you have to decide, is this how we're going to lose the game? We see this with the Steelers and Bengals. They were just too stubborn to do anything different against Jamar Chase, and it cost them a game. And so, like, for the Packers to say, all right, we're going to keep putting this guy out here who's struggling, who's giving up big plays, and we're going to potentially lose a game that's going to be really important down the line. Like, I would love to know if there's something else that they're reading in this situation, or if you know, it's just pure stubbornness. But Hobbs is somebody, I think you look back at the tape, he's too good of a player for me to think that he just forgot how to play.
Yep.
But they're putting him in a position that's a little bit different than historically how he's been used. So I don't know, like, this adjustment period probably needs to pick up the pace given that the Packers are so in on this season.
I'm with you. And I'm glad that you said that last part, because I watched a ton of Hobbs's tape coming in. I didn't love the signing. I thought it was fine. It didn't move the needle for me in any real significant way, one way or the other. I didn't think it was like this complete overpay. I certainly didn't think it was like a great deal or anything like that. I thought it was fine. That was mostly fine. But certainly going back and watching his tape from previous years, there was never anything that has been quite as bad as where it's been these last few weeks for Nate Hobbs. I don't expect this to be the long-term norm for him, but he had a really bad game. And if somebody's having a bad game and you have another option, like, you just have to go with it in that scenario. And it's not like, again, it's not like Hobbs is one of these like unquestioned, yep, he's one of the stars of this team. No, he's like, you know, kind of guy that you can move around, and he's kind of a fringe star, things like that. Like, you can go with Carrington in that situation. And to your point, it either reads as, hey, we're just going to give the guy that we paid a bunch the chance, or it reads as, we don't trust Carrington in that situation. I just thought he should have been out there, and I thought it was a rough day for Nate Hobbs. I think it's going to be better moving forward. I don't think it could be much worse, knock on wood, but we'd certainly need to see a lot better from Nate Hobbs one way or the other. Let's talk about something positive. Let's talk about our Luigi's Pizza players of the game. I think there were three obvious players of the game, so hopefully we can each just take one of them. Perry, you can go first. Who is your Luigi's Pizza player of the game?
Well, that gives me like I should choose the most obvious.
No, you can choose whoever one you want.
Which is, let's start with Micah Parsons. 10 pressures, 3 sacks. First time in his career he's had a 3 sack game. Literally, speaking of packs, which he said, Andrew, I literally said on the preview show, like, I don't know why fans expect Micah Parsons to like walk into every game and have 4 sacks. Like, that's an unrealistic expectation to have on him. And then he was very close to doing that. So apparently it's not that unrealistic, but just like an absolute game wrecker, obviously was in on pretty much every key moment and key stop. Don't know that there are necessarily words to describe how much he swings games. I was stoked about the signing to start. I don't think the signing needed, or the trade rather, needed much explanation, but watching it unfold has been just like so much more glorious than I ever thought it could be. And I really think that when he is on the field, the Packers have every opportunity to like win whatever matchup is. I mean, I don't know why the Cardinals left him one-on-one as much as they did, because that's crazy. Yeah. He was destroying, just absolutely destroying, and finally got a few holding calls. Without him, this game looks very different. And without him in every game, it looks very different.
He's been unbelievable. It goes without saying. Is this the week that Madden finally puts him up to a 99 overall? Probably should be, or probably overdue Madden to put him at a 99 overall. But no, he was absolutely amazing in this game. This is one of those, like, you traded for Micah for this reason, where your defense is struggling and you have to get big plays. I mean, 2 red zone sacks and then a sack on the final drive of the game when the game mattered most. He was a complete one-man wrecking crew. And it just felt like this is one of those ones where I found it hard taking my eyes off of Micah Parsons. Usually it's hard to take your eye off the ball. I couldn't take my eye off of Micah Parsons in this game. I was just watching him, and I'm just like, he is completely wrecking shop. Double teams didn't matter. Just an unbelievable freaking football player, and came up super clutch in this game. Andrew, anything else on Micah, or you can go to your player of the game if you'd like.
No, I mean, it's pretty awesome to have a player on your roster that you can just take for granted in important third down situations. Like, he's going to make an impact, whether that is absolutely roasting a pretty good offensive tackle in Jonah Williams or drawing a triple team like he did down the stretch. Like, he is super fun living up to the billing so far. For me, the Luigi's player of the game is Tucker Kraft. I you look at the box score, 5 for 58, a touchdown. Okay, that's really good for a tight end, but maybe not player of the game stat worthy, but it just felt like every time the Packers needed a big play on third down, Tucker Kraft was there to do it. He also had some incredible blocks, as he always does, one of which might have been illegal, but thankfully Josh Sweat was okay, came back into the game. It is fun to me to have a tight end that can be a go-to player and also brings the nasty, and to see Trey McBride and Tucker Kraft in the same game kind of going back and forth. Like, that to me is fun football.
I was thinking while watching this, that this is like the battle of the psycho white tight ends. And they both like went off in this game, obviously. Tucker is that guy. You talk about security blanket. I think it's still Romeo Doubs, but Tucker is getting to that point. Also, the key fourth down that they converted was obviously to him. Just reliable. Just a reliable guy who's always going to make something positive when he has the ball in his hands. It's so funny because like in that draft, like everyone was so excited about Luke, and Tucker needed like so much development, and he just accelerated his development to the point where he's like probably up there in like what top five tight ends in the league right now. Can we say that comfortably? And super underrated too. I think like you talk about the game and you could easily like forget unless he goes off for like a 150-yard game. But Andrew, I agree. Like all the big key offensive moments, it's either him or Josh Jacobs.
I love the Tucker Kraft addition to this. I did not think he was going to be one of the three, but I'm so glad that he is, because I think it's certainly worth calling out. And especially with that big fourth down conversion, the touchdown, it just, again, to your point, when they needed something big, they went to Kraft, and he usually was able to come through with a clutch play. The other two I was thinking of, Josh Jacobs. I know 13.55, 4.2 yard average isn't going to scream off the page. One catch for 3 yards, the two touchdowns, and it just felt like he was not going to let this team fail. He was going to, in those moments as well, make sure that he got in the end zone when he needed to. He is such a red zone weapon. Even when things are not exactly there for him, he still finds ways to make things happen. And knowing that he had the injury, the calf issue, I don't know if you heard what he said after the game. He's like, the team was really trying hard to protect him from himself and not play in this game. He's like, I had to go above and beyond to convince the team to let me play. And he's like, you guys don't understand. He's like, I'm one of those guys. He's like, if I'm okay, if I say I'm okay to play, I'm going to play. I'm not going to hurt this team. And I'm sure Green Bay is worried about re-injury or further injury or things like that. I'm sure that's what they were more worried about. But it sounds like he really had to fight to play in this game. I don't think Green Bay wins this game if Josh Jacobs doesn't play in this game. So kudos to him. Just what a big time performance coming off the injury. Hopefully, it didn't seem like there was any, re-injury or further injury of it. Hopefully he's feeling okay this week and he'll be good to go entirely against Pittsburgh, but big time performance from him. And then I don't know how you cannot say, anything more about Lucas Haversick and then what he did in this game. Again, going once again, 5 for 5 on kicks, including a 61 yarder. His field goal in the second half, if I remember correctly, was to tie the game at the time. I think I'm right in saying that.
Yeah.
It was
at the end of the half. It was like that.
No, I lied. The first one was to tie it 3-3. Then the second one was at the end of the half to make it 13-6. So my apologies. It was not a one in the second half to tie the game, but he did have the extra points both times. I think that's what I was thinking of, at 13-13 and 20-20, where he needed to make it to tie the game. And then his final one put them up by 4 rather than 3 on the extra point as well. But either way, 5 for 5, clutch kicking, a guy that was on the couch a couple weeks ago, not doing anything, to going 10 for 10 in his kicks in Green Bay. Another huge performance from him. Can't say enough about what he was able to bring to this team in Brandon McManus's absence.
Yeah, and it's easy to take that stuff for granted, and then you flip over after the game's done, watch the Giants kicker miss his second extra point of the game, cost them the win. And yeah. Like, you, it's so easy to take a street free agent kicker for granted, but for him to come in, like, they probably don't win today without him, and I'm not sure, like, the Bengals game certainly would have been very uncomfortable without him. So kudos, like, man, the Packers have some really good kicker luck over the last
Packers. It was a Packers franchise record, his 61. That's the longest kick any Packer in franchise history has ever kicked, which is just like kind of bonkers also, considering like Mason Crosby never kicked a 60 yarder. But I want to talk a little bit, Andy, if I can, about Josh Jacobs and also just like all three guys besides the kicker that we all brought up, because I think there's a pattern with the three of them, and it's that like they are incredibly vocal leaders. We mentioned X, not listed in this as a vocal leader earlier, but when there's like a key moment or a momentum swing, I guess, you know, Lucas deserves to be in this conversation too, considering I think going into the half with after his kick certainly provided some momentum juice. When there's a momentum swing needed, all three of the guys that we mentioned are the ones that are in on a play. And you don't, it's hard to quantify momentum, I think, and energy, but when you're giving the ball to, or, you know, requesting Micah Parsons do something to the ball, and you feel strongly that all three of those guys are actually going to get up and make a play, and then kind of juice up the guys around them to make a play, it does change the nature of the ball game. Because this game could have spiraled out of control, I think, very, very easily, given the way they played in the first half. And instead, they came back out and ended up having a come-from-behind win. And it says a lot that it's those three guys that are actually pretty consistently the ones like pushing that forward.
Yeah, well said. I love their leadership. And you, again, you need those guys, especially come playoff time, that just say, I'm not going to let us lose this game. And I thought, especially Micah Parsons, Josh Jacobs, Tucker Kraft in that conversation as well, they just had that mentality of, we're going to find a way to win this game no matter what, regardless of what's happened so far, any of it, they found a way. And I thought, again, Parsons, Jacobs, Kraft, Haversick as well, really made this one work. What about play of the game? What about for you guys was the one play that kind of stood out to you as the kind of must-have play of the game? I've got a couple in mind.
For me, it's the Rashawn Gary strip of Jacoby Brissett. I feel like the Cardinals were probably going down to score again there. Maybe the game gets a little out of control. You start feeling the pressure on offense. And I mean, I'm not sure that they win the game without that play. It seemed like all the momentum was one way and then it shifted back another. So while I don't think this was necessarily Rashawn's best performance of the season, I think that play really propelled them to swinging it back around in Green Bay's favor.
Fair.
That was one. The other is probably the fourth down stop in the fourth quarter. Again, they're driving, right? That was a huge play. Also, like, I mean, for all the conversations around tush push, QB sneak, etc., those are very hard plays to stop. And Jacoby Brissett is a very large human, a difficult man to stop on a QB sneak. So I thought that was a huge play. And again, they got no points out of that drive. They burned the clock for the Packers. They turn the ball over on downs and the Packers end up going down to score and ultimately winning. So I just think the defense, for its flaws today, or in this game, they got the big stop when they needed to. You have to applaud them for that.
One of my favorite things that I used to do a long time ago, I wrote an article called Shatter Points, and it would break down in great detail like the plays that swung the game one way or the other. And I'd usually choose like three or four plays and kind of go over them in, again, like super great detail and watch the film and everything and break it down. I really enjoyed it. It took a lot of time, didn't do it anymore, probably mostly because of that. But it felt like there were a lot of those shatter point plays in this one. The Gary Force fumble, certainly one of them. The fourth down stop that you're mentioning, Perry, absolutely one of them. The fourth down conversion that we talked about to Tucker Kraft, a huge moment in this game. And then I also thought, to your point earlier, Perry, as well, the 61 yarder before halftime, I know that that just cut it to 7 at halftime. It just felt like the whole first half was a massive pile of crap and they had nothing positive to go in on. And hitting that 61 yarder. And this is another one. I know this was not a great game for Matt. We'll talk about that, I'm sure. But that's usually a bad decision before halftime where you've got basically one play to get into field goal range that you've got to throw down the field and then try to attempt a 61 yarder. More often than not, more bad things are going to come out of that than good things. And he's just like, screw it. We're going to go to get points right here. Gets the big completion. They get the stop. They then kick the 61 yarder with their backup kicker and he crushes it. To be able to go in with anything at halftime at that point, to me, felt like it was even just like right before I was about to do that little halftime show, it felt totally different. It felt like there's just a completely different vibe than like, oh my God, everything sucks. It's like, well, that was cool. They just had a 61 yard field goal, franchise record. Just felt like it gave them a little bit of a boost in that one. So I think any of those four, honestly, could be the play of the game.
Also, to that point, we have not mentioned him yet, but Jordan did not jump off the stat page today, but I also thought played excellent in those moments. Like, to your point, Andy, to get that enough yardage, like a chunk play in that moment to Romeo Doubs to set up the field goal, and then to have like the wherewithal to get everyone down in order to kick it with 1 second left. Like, we have not seen them execute those well yet this season. So if you want to talk about maybe an area that they've improved upon, certainly the urgency in those moments was definitely there. Probably the only good thing that they did in the first half. But again, like, he led the game winning drive down the field in the fourth quarter. And for a lot of folks who want to say like, Jordan's not clutch, like da 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 da. Well, he did it today. He did it today. He did everything he needed to today. So also want to just quickly shout out the QB because we haven't even mentioned him yet. And it's been 35 minutes.
Interesting from ESPN standpoint. I don't love QBR in total as like a statistic or whatever. I'm not even sure I entirely understand their entire grading system for QBR. Jacoby Brissett, 279, two touchdowns, no picks at a 29.8 QBR. Jordan Love, 179 yards, one touchdown, no picks at a 71.7 QBR. So their rating of it, really liked what Jordan Love did in this game for whatever reason.
Is it yards per pass? Is like that?
No, there's a lot of factors that goes into it. I don't even think I have time to like define it all, but there's a billion different factors.
I saw a stat that Jacoby actually only had averaged like 4.8 yards.
He was at 7.8 yards per, and Love was at 6.2. So Brissett was actually better than Jordan in that category too. So I don't know. Yeah. Okay. But they liked him in QBR.
You might've been talking about yards per attempt, which is like another weird metric, Perry.
Okay, but I don't know.
To me, so, like, I obviously haven't watched the all 22 yet, but like it seems to me that the Cardinals' strategy on defense was keep everything in front of us, like commit to stopping the run, and then don't let Love have those intermediate throws where he usually kills people. I think Dobbs got a few of those, but like they seemed pretty willing to just let the Packers dink and dunk. And there were a few times, especially in the first half, where they seemingly kind of shot themselves in the foot. They ran on third and medium, which I don't love. And, you know, they had some weird stuff going on. But Love was really effective in those situations, you know, taking the four-yard completions on first and second down. So I thought, like, this was a really nice effort by him, but I don't think that like the way he performed within the game plan necessarily worked really well. But in the second half, he was super efficient. I think the Packers did a good job of stepping up when they needed to. It'd just be nice to not have to need to so often.
Yes, I'm right there with you. Let's talk about this offense, and maybe this is a great time to kind of talk about Matt LaFleur, play calling, etc. I thought there were some real head scratching decisions. The third and four sweep with Emmanuel Wilson to the outside was one that's the definition of trying to be a little bit too cute. The third and one pitch to the outside to Josh Jacobs late in the game, hate with a capital H. Is that the short side of the field too?
Do you remember?
That I do not understand at all. I would be willing to bet you a lot of money that they saw something on tape for both of those plays, that on like a third and shotgun situation that they're crashing down hard inside from that defensive end or something, and thought that if they did a little spin and handed it to Wilson, that they were going to have daylight on the outside. I'm sure they wanted a little bit of a tendency breaker because they passed almost every single time in that situation. And every once in a while, you have to throw a curveball. Not sure that was the time that you wanted it. I think that next play that you call after that little sweep, the fourth down play to Romeo Doubs, if that's your play call on third and one there, I think they're probably playing it almost identical in that situation. That's the time to take that shot down the field. And if you miss that, then you've got a fourth and inch or like a fourth and whatever in that situation. Because it would have been a fourth and one because it was the third and one and they lost, or the third and short and they lost, like, I don't know, whatever it was. They did not perform well on that particular sweep. And then late in the game, and kind of same thing, on third and whatever, call that play to Tucker Kraft. And then if you miss that, it's a fourth and short after it. It just felt like some of the sequencing was off. It did not feel like this offense was ever in rhythm in the first half. I would have a very difficult time defining exactly what it was that the offense was trying to accomplish in this game. I don't know. I don't know what they were trying to do. It didn't feel like they had a great feel of if they wanted to attack long, short, intermediate, check down, run. It didn't feel like they had it. And again, thankfully, as the game went on, they were better, but it was a very confounding game from Matt LaFleur in this one.
It was. So often I find, like, when he ends up going for it on fourth down, which I do want to give him props for, I'm like, why didn't you just call that play on third down?
Yeah.
Like, especially the play out to Tucker, I was like, that's an excellent play call. Why not just do that on third down instead of making them go for it on fourth? That's usually like my takeaway. I mean, Andy, you said everything excellently and I agree, but just like, that's my only additive. I'm just like, the sequencing is the confusing bit. I am very glad at his level of aggression. We talked about, you know, very aggressive to go for the field goal, obviously very aggressive to go for it on fourth down. Otherwise, you know, they would not have been scoring that touchdown. It did seem to me though, like Jordan was asking for it. Like, they sent the field goal unit out and then Jordan was like, no, like, we're going to go for it. So there is a level of, there's certainly a question of like, what's your thought process originally if Jordan hadn't made the case, but either way they did the right thing. And that's kind of all that matters.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the efficiency and the effectiveness of the Packers on third and fourth down is really frustrating. And I would echo all of your points, right? Like, if your fourth down play is a pretty typical pass play, I would rather see that on third down than like some of the gimmicky stuff that they tried in this one, and give Jordan Love two cracks at it. Like, instead of saying, okay, well, now we're in fourth down and it's all or nothing, and his best option is Romeo Doubs 40 yards downfield. Like, I would rather see them have the opportunity. I think, like, that's where your bread is buttered. And if you look at this offense, right, like, you're paying Jordan Love the money to be the star guy. You have a bunch of weapons for him to throw to. Go with that. Or if you're going to run it, please hand the ball off to Josh Jacobs and let him run behind this really great offensive line instead of like trying to get him out in space and relying on your wide receivers to block for him. It's odd to me. Like, Josh Jacobs' best trait is his vision. He's awesome. That's why he scores in the red zone every time. Like, he sees the field so well. He has the ability to make those jump cuts that make him a truly elite back. Like, I would rather see him do that in the backfield and more traditional handoff, or like, let him run off tackle than try to pitch to him in space. And the less we see Chris Brooks and Emmanuel Wilson carrying the ball is pretty cool with me.
Yeah. I mean, the only reason I think that they were was because they were had Josh on a pitch count tonight. Was my thought process on that one.
I think so too. Yeah. But then that's probably not the time to pull out the third and four sweep.
Right. Like, you know, right. Like, let's not be problem. Cute. Like, let's just run behind the tackles, please.
It felt that this game was trying to be far too cute at times. I talked about this a lot on the post game show, the live one as well, of just like, at some point you don't need to outsmart the other side or outsmart the coach or outsmart the other team. Like, just call the simple stuff. And sometimes the simple stuff is okay. It doesn't have to always be oh, we know they're going to do this in this scenario, so we're going to run a sweep to Emmanuel Wilson to catch him off guard. Like, you're doing them a favor. Like, run some of your best stuff, the stuff that you're really good at, and make them defend you, because you're a really good team with a really good quarterback. And I would much rather do that than some of the stuff where they just got far too keen in this game. Going just back to the fourth down decision for a moment of Matt LaFleur late in the game, he said, quote, scared money don't make money. And he went on to say, when our quarterback is coming off the field and I can see the disdain on his face, no matter what we call, this guy is going to make it work. That's why he decided to call the timeout and go with this quarterback. I will say this. I do take a little bit of an issue with having to call the timeout to get to that point. The only reason I say that is that was your second timeout that you used. If you call the fourth down play there immediately, go for it, and you miss it, now you still have those two timeouts and you still have the ability. I know you have got the 2-minute warning and two timeouts, and you have a little bit of a margin for error if things go wrong. By having to put the field goal team on, then call the timeout, and then put the offense back on the field, you miss that, and your margin for error is basically nothing at that point. It basically comes down to that fourth down play is a must have. Now, I would rather he get it right, call the timeout, and get the right, make the right decision in the end. And that's what he did. And I think that was the right decision, even at the moment, regardless of what would have happened. I think it was the right decision to keep the offense on the field. But I thought overall that was a huge play that swung the game. Glad that Matt was aggressive. And when he needed it, called the absolute perfect play in that scenario.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, like, I'll be honest, in the moment, I wanted them to kick it. Like, I felt like the game is on the line. Like, if this is incomplete, you're not going to win this game. Which obviously they would have still had a chance if they could have come up with a stop. But I think those are the situations where we have been calling on LaFleur to be aggressive. He was aggressive, so I'm not going to be critical. I'll be critical of myself for not having the faith that they were going to convert that in time. But the flip side of it is Jonathan Gannon going for it on fourth down probably cost his team the game. And sure. So, like, that's the flip side of it. You see it blow up in the face of coaches that are extra aggressive once in a while. So I just want people who, we're all super fans here, but like, when this doesn't work at some point in the season, just remember how good it feels when it does work.
Well, it's high risk, high reward. It's like the definition of what going for in that moment is. I would personally rather see my coach be aggressive and play for the win than play to tie the game. Having the faith in his guys to do it. But to your point, Andrew, I mean, obviously I'd be super pissed off if they hadn't converted and ended up losing.
It's a 48 yard field goal in that situation. And as awesome as Haversick has been, you have a backup kicker and that's not a guaranteed field goal right there. And you almost feel like is at some point the magic's going to run out, right? Of like, he's probably due for a miss at some point. It felt like even if you make it, you now have Arizona with the ball, 2-minute drill, and with the opportunity to go down and score for the win, right? And they did get into field goal range pretty easily. They had to obviously go for the touchdown. Green Bay would have played defense differently, so who knows what the butterfly effect is there. But it felt like you almost, again, give them the ball 2 minutes left with the opportunity to win the game, even if you tie it. And if you miss it, it feels like it's probably over as well. So I liked going for it. It's not always going to work out, but I like the aggression. I thought it was the right move, and thankfully it paid off for them. Defensively, some very frustrating moments in this one. You have the Trey McBride that we talked about, completely dominated, like public enemy number one, the one player who can't beats you a lot in this game. You leave him wide open on numerous occasions. Your corners, I thought, really struggled. It is much of an issue as we maybe thought it was going into the game. Feels, I think, even a little bit worse coming out of this one. And this is another one where it didn't feel, again, to your point earlier, we discussed it at length, so we don't need to go into it too much in greater detail, but Andrew just didn't feel like they had a good feel of what they wanted to take away in this one. We'll be right back. What's going on, everyone? I am so excited to tell you about this new game-changing product that I've been using before a big night out. It's called Prealcohol. ZBiotics Prealcohol Prebiotic Drink is the world's first genetically engineered prebiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's a buildup of this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for rough days after drinking. Now, Prealcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. So just remember to make Prealcohol your first drink of the night, drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. Listen, I get it. I was on the fence about Prealcohol initially myself, but I've now used it for bachelor parties, fall cookouts, and at a huge tailgating event, and I'm telling you, it's the real deal. And guess what? Football is here, which means more opportunities to get out there with your friends and celebrate the season. So before that backyard barbecue brew, post-touchdown mixer, or cocktail by the campfire, don't forget your ZBiotics pre-alcohol. Drink one before drinking and wake up feeling great and ready to take on the next day and all that football season has to offer. So go to ZBiotics.com/packaday to learn more and get 15% off your first order when you use code packaday at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/packaday and use the code packaday at checkout for 15% off. Make sure to support our partners and use that code packaday.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see them act like an elite defense, if that makes any sense. Like, yeah. I would love to see them say, hey, you know what? We realize there's limitations with our corners, but we're going to allow them to be what they are. We have Keyshawn Nixon and Nate Hobbs. They're super aggressive. They're physical. We're going to let them get in receivers' faces and at least make it difficult to complete those, like, three-step drop, get it out passes. And then, you know what, if you can block this front for 3.5 seconds and your receivers can beat us deep with good safety coverage, then, like, kudos, congratulations, we'll shake your hand, we'll move on. But I think getting paper cutted to death, especially by their best weapons, is just not the way to be an effective, like, championship level defense.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Perry, anything to add?
No, I couldn't agree more. And again, to your point, it's like, that's why I want CV on the field, not to belabor a point, but it's like, he's going to be the guy who, like, gets in your face and bothers you. And yeah, it might cause a penalty or two, but it's not going to give up as many big plays as we saw. So I don't know. I think the expectations of the defense have been sky high since the start of the season, which is fair enough. I do feel like in these games, they always do just enough to keep the Packers in it at the bare minimum. Besides the Cowboys game, I don't know that they've necessarily been, like, the problem. This is my opinion. They haven't been the problem to me. There's certainly moments where you wish that they had played it a little bit differently. And we've talked about it in this game. Like, there's certainly things that they can clean up, but I still think they said it before the game started. One of the announcers said they're top three defense this season. So for me, complaints around the defense so far this season have been just like, hey, here's what you can do to get even better than you already are, but you're excellent, and I want you to continue to play excellently.
I do think I'm a little bit frustrated that a defense that was expected to be, to your point, Perry, you know, and Andrew, both of you guys, like, can they be a top tier defense? I don't need to see them struggling with Jacoby Brissett and Joe Flacco quite as much, if I'm being honest. At some point, you're going to face some really good quarterbacks. And to be fair, like, they faced Jared Goff in week one. They played better against him. They did not do well against one of those very good quarterbacks in Dak Prescott earlier in the season. I need to see some better pass defense here. And I do know that, you know, LVN, Devontae Wyatt being out certainly doesn't help. Your injuries in this one defensively are basically your number one defensive tackle and your number three defensive end, and you're entirely healthy outside of that defensively for the most part, right? Like, that's as healthy as you're going to be in the middle of October in the NFL. You're going to have a couple guys that are out. I just need to see it be a little bit more locked down, not allowing some of those explosives. I don't need to pitch a shutout. I don't need it to be perfect. They finally got a turnover. They almost got a second that got called back in this one. There were some moments there. They had 6 sacks in this game. That's a really good sign. Micah was unbelievable again. This a lot of times felt like Micah do something or, oh God, we're probably in trouble. And it shouldn't have to be that complicated. It shouldn't have to be that hard. I need to start seeing a little bit of incremental improvement right now from the defense. Fair. Anything out of bounds there?
No, not at all. One of the things that, I mean, I don't know. Somebody needs to tell me. Maybe you can tell me later this week, Andy, if this is true or not. It seems like when they have Micah like mugging in the middle, the linebackers seem to lose their like priorities and coverage somehow. Because a lot of those times McBride got in behind the coverage, it seemed like those were the times when they were trying to get Parsons running from the interior. So, I mean, maybe I'm totally off base on that, but I think there's some tendencies that they have to watch out for. And certainly it continues to be frustrating as a fan when you don't take away the best or the other team's best option.
I will say this. I can't speak to that directly. Mike Wall talked about this week of like, basically every time Micah's lining up off ball, you're just doing the other team a favor. I mean, where were all of his impact plays today? They were at defensive end. They couldn't block him at defensive end. Like you don't need to overcomplicate. Like I get in theory, I was super excited of like, oh, they're going to be able to move Micah Parsons all around, put him over the center, do all this stuff. I don't think I need it. I think even if he's over center, I don't want him twisting or doing anything with anyone else. I want him going right at that center. Like I want, if you're going to go like five out and you're going to play like eventually LVN and Gary at defensive ends and like Wyatt and Brooks are going to be at defensive tackle. And each of those are lined up against, you know, tackle guard tackle. And then you've got, you know, Micah one-on-one standing over the center so that you get each of those guys with one-on-ones. Cool. I'm okay with that, but I don't need him even further off the ball and I don't need him doing twists and stunts. And quite frankly, he's been a complete nightmare at defensive end. I just think to Mike's point, you're doing the other team a favor when he's anywhere but defensive end right now. So I just think let him get after the quarterback the way that he's been doing it because he's nuking offensive tackles. I don't need to get, that's another one. I just don't need him to get too cute with it.
100%.
I was going to go somewhere before that, and now I don't know exactly where I was going to go defensively. I think we kind of covered everything defensively. So let's talk special teams really quick. I don't think there was any. I mean, Haversick we talked about. The kick returns weren't great. Did the Cardinals punt in this game?
Yes.
One. Oh, they have Pat O'Donnell? I didn't even realize it was Pat O'Donnell. Yeah. 142-yard punt that ended in a touchback. All right. So is it, 22-yard net? All right. Good job, punt return team. That's all you can ask for. Let Pat O'Donnell kick it out of the end zone.
I would say just on the kick returns, I think it's fun to see Savion Williams back there. I would love to see him not run directly into a tackler. That would be great. I don't know. There's a lot coming at these kick returners. And like you can see the separation between the ones that are experienced and probably the more elite returners in the league and the ones that are just kind of like learning how to do this. But I think Savion's got the juice to be a really fun kick returner in the future, but I just a little improvement on the vision for whoever's free would be fantastic.
The weird thing is Savion was really dynamic in college. Like he making people miss, juking people, spin moves. Like he was very dynamic. We haven't exactly seen that. It seems like he's almost like running into contact and trying to run through people more. When you get to the NFL, that's not what you want to do. You don't want to try to run through people as much. So I don't know exactly why that is, but that has not certainly matched his college tape or scouting report to say the least. But I don't disagree with you. Overall,
he's a significantly bigger target than what people are used to on kick returns too.
That's true. Overall, I'm giving the special teams a passing grade in this one based on Lucas Haversick almost alone, I think. So a couple big returns that they allowed, a big face mask penalty, some kicks that went into the end zone that gave him a free 35-yard line. But overall, I'll take this performance from the special teams. We talked about Matt. A couple other miscellaneous notes really quick. Your inactives for this game were Brandon McManus, Pierre Strong, who they called up only in case that Josh Jacobs wasn't going to be able to play, Donovan Jennings and Anthony Belton, Ben Sims at tight end, LVN and Devontae Wyatt were the other two who we knew were going to be out in this game. Packers currently in the standings as we sit right now. We do not have San Francisco or Atlanta's game done as we are doing this, although neither of them are going to jump Green Bay. Green Bay is 4-1-1 on top of the NFC North. The Detroit Lions, of course, at 4-2, as are the Chicago Bears. In the conference, Green Bay is number 2 overall. If Tampa were to lose to Detroit on Monday Night Football, Green Bay would jump into the number 1 spot in the NFC, and league-wide, Green Bay is number 3 overall right now behind only the Indianapolis Colts, who are at 6-1, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who again are at 5-1 and play Detroit on Monday Night Football. Thoughts on the league-wide status of your Green Bay Packers?
I think it just goes to show like what Andrew said at the top of the show, which is like you have this idea of these like teams that are at the top right now, and you cognitively you think, oh, they're playing so much better than the Packers, but like then you look at this and like how much better can anyone be playing if the Packers are the third best ranked team in right now, and could be like in the one seed, if you want to call it that this early. It seems stupid, but top of the NFC. So I think like maybe a collective deep breath on like everyone is also working out kinks, and everyone is also going to have like weird fluky ugly wins and weird fluky losses to teams that they shouldn't lose to because it's October. And in the grand scheme of the league, I think the Packers are still in a very good position.
Go ahead, Andrew.
I was just going to say to echo what Perry is saying, like as Packer fans, we feel like, oh my gosh, this team, they are not living up to expectations. They've had two rough wins following a tie and a loss to a team they shouldn't have lost to. And like everything's panicky, but the good news is most fan bases around the league feel exactly the same way. Like if you talk
or
to
worse.
Yeah. Right. Like talk to a Bills fan right now. And the level of panic that they're facing after losing two in a row, like they're still a Super Bowl contender. And I think if we look externally at the Packers, they're still a Super Bowl contender, lots to improve, lots that I think we'll see improved over the coming weeks. So stick with it.
Your teams that are 5-2 or better, Indianapolis 6-1, who, as I mentioned, they were down to the almost the exact same scenario to Arizona, 27-24 Arizona. Arizona's in the lead by 3 points. Jonathan Taylor gets a rushing touchdown similar to Josh Jacobs with 4 minutes left in the game, so a little bit more time. But Indianapolis wins 31-27 in that game. They are the number one team with a plus 92 point differential, by the way. And again, only a 4-point win against Arizona. Number two, Tampa Bay at 5-1. Green Bay at 4-1-1. New England at 5-2. Denver at 5-2, who should have lost to the New York Giants today. And it took the Giants giving everything they could away at the end of that game to give Denver that win. They're at 5-2. The Eagles are at 5-2. They've lost two of their last three and had to fight through the Carson Wentz-led Minnesota Vikings. And then the Rams at 5-2 are playing some really good football, beat Jacksonville easily today. Those are your 5-2 teams or better. The Rams, Eagles, Broncos, Patriots, Packers, Bucks, and Colts. And outside of maybe the Colts, I guess, like everyone's got their scars right now, including your Green Bay Packers. And yes, those scars will come back to haunt Green Bay if they don't fix them, but they do still have time to fix them. And as Mike Wall said this past week, better to learn those lessons in a win than in a loss. Packers go to Pittsburgh this week. They are 3.5-point favorites at open. Maybe that's changed by the time you're listening to this, but as of the open of the line, Packers by 3.5 in Pittsburgh. Of course, Aaron Rodgers versus Green Bay. Andrew, I'll start with you. What are you looking forward to in this one?
Yeah, I mean, like outside of the Rodgers thing, which is going to dominate all of the headlines, it's two of the best franchises in the league over the last 30 years. It's two really amazing fan bases. It's Sunday Night Football. It's two teams with a lot on the line. Like, I don't know. I'm excited about everything. I'm excited to see how this Packers offense plays against a really good defense. And granted, from a Pittsburgh perspective, they're coming off of getting destroyed by Joe Flacco. So it's interesting to see how they bounce back. And I'm really interested to see how the Packers defense lines up against this Steelers offense, which has some really exciting things about it and some really, like, frustrating things about it. And, you know, DK Metcalf against the secondary, Micah Parsons against that offensive line. Like there's some juicy matchups, should be really fun.
Perry.
Andrew said it great. I'll add two of the best coaches also scheming up against each other. I met just the biggest Mike Tomlin fan. There's one Mike Tomlin fan in the world. Like it is me. That's always fun too, to see how the two of them kind of joust. I'm coming up with some very strange words tonight. I think the Aaron Rodgers of it all is of course a fun storyline, but he's also playing quite well this season.
Yeah.
He actually looks like he's having a bit of a a come up. I don't know. I'm toying with this theory. I have to have more data points on it, but I'm toying with this theory that two seasons post Achilles is where you see people bounce back from. It's just like feeling like that every single time I see someone tear their Achilles, they come back the next season. They're not so great. And then two seasons later is really where they look good. So anyway, yeah. That's my theory on Aaron Rodgers. But I also think the Steelers defense has some weaknesses for sure, that the Packers offense can exploit. So it just should be a fun Sunday night football game.
Steelers are very like high risk, high reward. They allow a lot of yards, a lot of points. They also take away the football and get a lot of sacks too. TJ Watt, Nick Herbig, two former Badgers, big time players on that defensive line for Pittsburgh. So this is going to be a really interesting one. Taking care of the football is going to be paramount for the Packers this week. I'm so excited for this one. Big fight feel Sunday night football. That's where Green Bay's kind of been their best, although they did get a tie against Dallas in Sunday night football on the road. So I still think Green Bay is going to be up for this one, and I cannot wait. Going to be really fun. When Perry does start using the word joust, I know it's past your bedtime and we have to get out of here. So that's my indicator. It's time to get out really quick. Bears beat the Saints on Sunday. Vikings lost to the Eagles. Those are two big games. And of course, we've got Lions, Bucks on Monday Night Football. Perry, final thoughts before we get out of here. Anything we want to plug on the way out?
I'll be back with Maggie on Packs What She Said, third time Packs What She Said was mentioned on the show. With a recap show Monday night and or Tuesday morning. Otherwise regular cadence, and you can find me on socials.
Andrew?
Yeah, Kyle and I are in a little bit of a hiatus. We have some personal and professional stuff going on. So we're taking a very temporary break from the draft fields, but we have some exciting stuff coming up with Pack a Day that if you checked out the history episode that we released like a month ago or so, we're hoping to do some fun stuff with that. And then of course we're getting into draft season way sooner than I can possibly imagine. So go and check it out.
I'm so excited about Micah, and obviously today's a great example. As I start looking forward to the draft and remember that the Packers don't have first round picks in the next two drafts, there is a little bit of me that's like, just a tiny bit like, oh, like no first round picks for the next 2 years. Like that's going to be a bit of a bummer, but we can worry about that in April and March and whatnot. So
right the now, Cowboys can enjoy the 32nd pick that they get from the Packers.
Well said. That's the perfect way to end it. Go follow her at Perry_Goldstein. Follow him at AndrewMertag.bsky.social, Andrew Mertag on social. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL, Packaday Podcast at Packaday Podcast. It's going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Packo.
Go Packo.